Yeah, so the question is, we've all been there, is how good is good enough, or how bad is too bad? And I remember when I was in first grade, I went over to my grandparents' house for the weekend, and my grandma had this jar of candy and Jawbreakers. I really like Jawbreakers. And so, you know, once in a while, she'd hand me one or two of them, but I always wanted more. And so she's going to the store, and she tells me, I'm going to run down to the store for just a few minutes, and I have to leave you by yourself. Don't get into the candy. Don't get into the candy jar. It's like, okay, grandmother, I won't. I mean, her car was out of that driveway. I had that jar in my hand. You know, I'm going through there and taking some Jawbreakers. I shook it around like this and I set it down. I thought, oh, it looks the same to me. And I went and watched TV. And here comes grandma back. She's loading the groceries into the kitchen. And she says, did you take any of that candy? And I'm like, no, grandma, I didn't take any of that candy. She goes, are you sure you didn't take? Grandma, I told you I didn't take any candy. And just as I said that, I hear her dump them out and start to count. One, two, three. I was like, oh, you know, God. I started thinking, you know, the first thought in your head is how good is good enough? How bad is bad enough? I mean, you see it right in school when you get started, you know, you're little and you start to realize, oh, they're grading me. You know, you compare your grades to someone else. Is my grades good enough? Am I as good as them? And maybe you went through this, I went through this, you check your family out. You start to realize at some age that, oh, everybody has families. Is my family as good as their family? Am I good enough based on my family? You get into high school, it's all about athletics, at least it was for me. Am I a good enough athlete? Am I good enough based on how athletic I am? And then, you know, you get my age, your age, you start to think about, do I look good enough? Am I good enough based on how I look? You know, I didn't know until I got married that women go through this their whole life. They're like, every woman with curly hair wants straight hair. Every woman with straight hair wants curly hair. And, you know, it's like, am I good enough based on how I look? Am I good enough based on the size of my income from my job, my house, the kind of car I drive? How good is good enough? And then you bring God into the picture. Where does he draw the line? You know, am I good enough for God? Am I good enough to go to heaven? Where does he draw the line at? I can barely come up to my own line. And then where does God draw his line? Is there some imaginary line somewhere that if you tell one more lie than that guy, then you don't get to go to heaven? But, you know, well, I didn't know how many lies I got to tell. If somebody would have told me, I would have tried to tell just that many. And, you know, how good is good enough? Especially when it comes to heaven. You know, we think of heaven as like a destination, like a concert. You have to have a ticket to get into heaven. You know, or it's like a country. You have to have some kind of a passport to get in there. And it's all the ticket and the passport. It's all about goodness. How good do I have to be to get to go into heaven? And then you wonder, is that really what it is? Is heaven a destination for good people? How good do you have to be? Put the big idea in your notes. Good people don't go to heaven. This might be a shocker. Good people don't go to heaven. Forgiven people do. What if the criteria for heaven is not goodness? What if it's forgiveness? What if heaven is really more of a consummation of the relationship that I have with God already? Think about it like this. Let's say that you were going to go camping and you came into a little money from work. Maybe you're in sales, you get a little bonus, and you decide, you know, I'm going to invite my entire family to go camping with me. I'm going to pay for everything. So you tell everybody in your family, you know, in a couple of months, I'm going to get the sites, I'm going to pay for all the food, everything, and everybody's invited to go camping with me in a couple of months. Everybody gets an invitation. And some people would show up, they'd go camping, and some people wouldn't. Probably based on whether they wanted to go camping with you. What if heaven is just an extension of the relationship that we have here? Well, sometimes people will ask me, well, who's going to get to go to heaven? And I normally say, well, whoever wants to be with God here will probably be with God there. Because it's just an extension of that. In a relationship with God, catch this. If you're a note taker, just write it somewhere in the margins of your notes. Our relationship with God is not based on our goodness. It's based on his goodness that he forgives us. It doesn't have anything to do with how good I am. It has everything to do with how good he is. And I can be forgiven. When Jesus was on the cross, of course, this is Easter today, so the big topic is the resurrection. Jesus came back alive. But before he did, there was a cross. And Jesus actually talked about forgiveness. There were discussions that happened while he was on the cross. Look at your notes. I'll read it to you. When they came to the place called the Skull, so it was like a kind of a hill, and it was nicknamed the Skull. That's what everybody called it. And that's where the crosses were. They crucified him there, along with criminals, one on his right and the other on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." Man, I'd like to have that attitude sometimes when somebody wrongs me or does something against me. I wish I could just say to myself, they don't know what they're doing. Just forgive them for that. Forgiveness being the key. Jesus has a moment where he's on the cross and he speaks it out into the whole world. Our relationship with God is based on forgiveness. What if heaven is the place where everyone gets to be who's decided they want to be forgiven? What if it doesn't have anything to do with my goodness and there is no line? If you're forgiven, you have a relationship with God. Now, Jesus has these conversations. I wanted to look at a couple of things that happened right in your note. Forgiven people feel accepted by God. Oh, you guys want to see me dance? Forgiven people feel accepted by God. Let's read together. One of the criminals hanging beside him scoffed, "So you're the Messiah, are you?" Now think about it. There was three crosses. So maybe think there's three crosses. Jesus is in the middle, and then there's a person on his right and a person, and they're criminals. So they've done something bad enough that they're crucified. Okay, so this is the scene right here. One of the criminals hanging beside him scoffed, "So you're the Messiah, are you?" The Hebrew name for Christ. "Prove it by saving yourself and us too while you're at it." But the other criminal protested, "Don't you fear God, even when you've been sentenced to die? We deserve to die for our crimes, but this man hasn't done anything wrong." Then he said to Jesus, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus replied, "I assure you today you will be with me in paradise." So I relate to the first guy. He's a blame shifter. He wants to put the blame somewhere else. He's not interested in talking about forgiveness. It doesn't even come to his mind. He wants to sort of shift the blame. He's saying, "I don't deserve this kind of a consequence." Have you ever been there? You know you've done something bad, but your first thought is, "I know it was bad, but it's not this bad." I mean, we always do creative ways to try to get away from our guilt. There's so many different ways to dodge it, and I understand. I've done that before. I've said, "You know, I know what I did was wrong, but it wasn't this wrong. I didn't deserve it to get like this. I didn't deserve this kind of consequence." He's blame shifting. Seems like he's even maybe the kind of person, and I've been there, where you kind of shake your fist at God, or you're kind of angry at God. You're like, "You know, you could have done something about this." And before Jesus can answer him, the other criminal chimes in and he says, "Wait a minute, that's not how it is with God. You don't have to hide your bad stuff with God. You can show God all your bad stuff." He says to Jesus, "Remember me. Jesus, I understand. It's okay if you see all the past things that I've done that were wrong. God, I invite you to go down memory lane in my life." It's basically what he's saying. "You can see all the things that I've ever done that are good and all the things that I've done that is wrong. I'm not going to try to hide any of the bad stuff from you or dodge any of the bad stuff. I'm not about blaming anybody. Jesus, I just want to be with you. I know what that feels like when you finally get to that place where you're so done with all the gymnastics of trying to get away from the guilt and shame, and you just go before God and say, please, you know, when he forgives me and he takes the guilt off me, it does feel like paradise." Even here, he points ahead. He says, "You want to be with me now? You'll be with me then." What do you need to be forgiven of? The story doesn't matter anymore. You have the opportunity to just go to God and just say, I know you see it. I see it too. I want to be with you. I want to be forgiven. And he tells him that he'll be with him immediately in paradise. What do you need to be forgiven of? There's no ticket. There's no passport. If you need to be forgiven, Jesus is willing to forgive you. Because forgiven people go to heaven, not good people. We call this a church for everyone because everybody's got their stuff. I like to tell people this church was ruined the minute I walked in the door. What do you need to be forgiven of? Now the second thing, look here. Forgiven people feel close to God. When I was just starting out as a Christ follower, trying to figure the whole thing out, I didn't know who Jesus was. I didn't know he was Jewish. I didn't know the story. I didn't know any of the key points of it at all. I just knew that I wanted to be with God now, and I didn't really understand that God accepted me based on his goodness and not my own. So I had a lot of skeletons in the closet, so to speak. And I was always trying to figure out what to do about them and who I could talk to about them and would God be close to me. And I came into my relationship with Jesus with a lot of baggage. And I wish I could say to you today that it was everybody else's fault and I came from a broken family and it was all their stuff. But the truth is, there was plenty of times in my life that it was just like with those jawbreakers. I knew I wasn't supposed to do it and I did it anyways. You know, you know you're not supposed to do something and you decide to do it and then you struggle with how good is good enough. You know, what am I going to do about that? And that's how I arrived into the faith. And if you're here today and you're sort of checking out your life and you're willing to check out church today and you're wondering, okay, how much of my life do I have to clean up before I can go to God? None. You don't have to clean up a thing. Jesus doesn't ask you to clean up your life. He says, give me your life and I'll help you clean up. And that's what it's been for me all these years, is figuring it out and walking with him and finding out what it is to be close to him. Because I really believed, like relationship with people, when you do stuff wrong with them, they back up. They don't want to be close to you. That's all I'd ever known. And so I thought God would be the same way. If I do something wrong, he won't want to be close to me. So I would walk around struggling all the time. It's like, well, what do I do now? And how close do you want to be to God? There's this story that happens. I want to read it to you. By now it was noon. So this is right at the moment in the Bible. By now it was noon. The whole earth became dark. The darkness lasting 3 hours. A total blackout. Someone wrote this down. They were there. They saw this. This is an eyewitness that wrote this down. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion, a Roman guard, who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, surely this man is the Son of God. In those days, they had this great Jewish temple. The Jewish church was the national church all around where Jesus lived, in Israel. And they had this amazing, magnificent temple right in the middle of Jerusalem. And it was supposed to be the place where everybody could go and feel close to God. That's why they made it. Come to this building if you're struggling, you've done a lot of wrong things, you feel like you're far from God. Come to this building and you'll feel close to God. That was the whole point of it. And yet it had become just the opposite. This temple, let me try to describe it to you. It had all these different barriers in it and kind of like courtyards. And so the first barrier, right, sort of like right in the very beginning, there was a courtyard and a barrier there. And that's as far as the non-Jewish people could go. That's as far as they go. So if you weren't Jewish, if you didn't practice the Jewish religion, if you didn't have the right religion, you could go just that far. That's as far as you could go, and you couldn't go any further. In fact, they found years later a sign that they had hung in this area, and there was a line there. You couldn't go any further. And let me read you what the sign said. No foreigner is to enter. Whoever is caught will have himself to blame for his subsequent death. Nice friendly church. So, you know, you come from the wrong religion, wrong race. And then the women, that's as far as they could go too. So if you were a woman in that day, you had to stay a long ways away from God. You couldn't. So think about it. Your gender, based on your gender, your race, your religious background, that qualified for how close you could come to God. That's why we call this a church for everyone. But that's how it was when Jesus died. All the women had to stay back. Everybody that didn't have the race, didn't have the right religious background, stay back. Now the next group, the Jewish men, so they got to go a little bit further, but they had to have their act completely together. Everything had to be in order with the church. The Jewish men could go a little bit further. There was an area for them. They were a little bit further. And then there was the Jewish priests, and they could go a little bit further, you know, and they were kind of the big wigs of the church. And then there was the main guy. They called him the high priest, and he was the only one that got to go into the special room. That's the room where they felt God was at, where he could really be close to God. Only he could go in there. The guy that ran the whole church, he was in charge of everything. Only he could go in there. And there was a curtain in front of that, and it was 70 feet high and 4 inches thick. Historians wrote that if you took teams of horses on both sides and sent them in different directions, they could not rip that curtain. But when Jesus breathed his last breath, he ripped it. And it was his way of saying, God doesn't want to be far away from you. He doesn't want to be distant. It was never supposed to be this way. I had a friend that was telling me one time when she couldn't, in her mind, find God, and she felt so far away from God, and she didn't know what to do, and she had gone in, and she laid down on her bed, and she thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to close my eyes. I'm just going to send my spirit and my mind, my heart out as far as it would go. So she laid down, and she sort of saw herself, you know, like coming up out of her body. I know, ooh, you know, but anyway, she did. And she's sort of coming up, and she's going out further and further. And she said she could actually feel herself like sailing out into space. Kind of like a Star Wars movie, you know, and she's sailing out and she's going further and further and further, and she's just pushing her mind out there. She's going as far as she can, and she can't find God at all. And she's like, where is he? Why won't he be with me? She's going out for, and she said, all of a sudden, a little voice right next to her ear said, I'm right here. I'm close to you. I don't want to be far away. I want to be close. There was a reason why the temple had gotten so mean-spirited, because religion had started to replace relationship. And when Jesus spoke his last breath and he tore that curtain, he was trying to make a statement. God wants to be close to you. He doesn't want you to be religious. You don't have to keep your distance from him. You know, our culture today, it's amazing how many people won't even go to church. I mean, it used to be you could invite someone to church to come to church with you, and at least it was on their radar, you know, but you invite somebody to church now, and they look at you like, are you crazy? I'm not giving up a Sunday to go to church. And I understand the problem. Seems like a place that you'll just find out how guilty you are. You'll find all the religious rules and regulations. We live in the most religious state in America, and today 50% of the people that live all around us will be in no type of church. And they're getting further and further away from God too. They're just disinterested. It's like, I don't want to be involved in church. I don't want to be around anything like that. And as they do, they just sort of drift further and further away. And their thinking is that God's just fine with it. God doesn't care about me. He's just fine if there's lots of distance between us. Just like when Jesus was living. And when the curtain split in two, it must have been something, because like, it was a forever statement. Religion will never get you there. But God would like to be close to you. Do you want to be close to him? See, forgiven people feel close to God, not good people. That's not the point. We're trying some things at East Lake to try to figure that out because less and less people are even willing to go to church. And so when you leave today, they're going to give you a handout of some experiments we want to try and some things that we want to try here, some different ways of gathering, because we understand many, many, many people now in our culture, we're in a decline in America. People won't have anything to do with church because they don't think it's a possibility that they could be close to God. And if I have to go to church to do it, I'm out. So you get one, you're on your way. It's just something we're going to try because here's the thing. God doesn't want you to keep his distance. He breathed so the curtain was torn so everyone could come in. You don't have to be religious to come in. He'd be close to everyone. Now here's the bottom line, and as you look at it, forgiven people believe God has our best interest in mind. Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, he wrote Tom Sawyer, had a reoccurring dream. And in Mark Twain's dream, he was laying on the ground and there was a 300-pound Bible on top of him. You don't have to be a psychiatrist to figure out what that dream means. Way too heavy. Lots of stuff I have to do before I can be okay with God. And yet Jesus says he has our best interest in mind. When I'm so tired from trying to be good enough, I'll never believe that. I'm so busy trying to earn my way. If God ever does anything for me, it's just because I've earned it. And the real truth is, forgiven people believe God has their best interest in mind. Look what it says in the Bible here. He is so rich in kindness and grace that he purchased our freedom with the blood of his son and forgave our sins. And he has showered down upon us the richness of his grace. And listen to this. For how well he understands us and knows what is best for us at all times. Good people don't believe God has what's best in mind for them. Forgiven people do. Good people don't go to heaven, forgiven people do. Good people don't feel God accepts them, forgiven people do. And forgiven people believe that God has their best interest in mind and wants to be close to them. Now on your connection card, if you just grab it for a minute, can you imagine a world that, or your world, or your friends, your family, can you imagine if people actually could get out from underneath the idea that it's their goodness and they could be forgiven? Can you imagine a world where people actually believed that God had their best interest in mind and they could believe it because they were forgiven? How about your world? If you came today and you never even really thought about having a relationship with Jesus, that it could be real. On your connection card, you can just mark that. Say, I want to do that. We'll send you some stuff to help you get started. This could be your day. Here's the big question that's hanging in the air. Do you need to be forgiven? Because forgiven people have a relationship with God. They go to heaven. They feel accepted. They feel close.